episode 132 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded May 11th, 2017. Family Gatherings. Guys,
yeah,
we are back.
Yeah,
and I have to give a little bit of a disclaimer right at the start of this episode.
Uh-oh.
About what happened last week with our episode.
I told you I was sorry.
You got to keep apologizing, but yeah. That's not what I'm talking about.
Okay,
Randy.
Good. I don't know what I did, but I'm sure it was my fault.
Always be apologizing.
ABA.
We know the acronym. No, this is when I put up the episode, it. For some reason, our RSS feed glitched with iTunes, and I feel like something like this has happened before, but before I've been able to fix it, I could not get it to work where our episode would show up on iTunes. I worked time and time again trying to republish the episode, fix the metadata. For some reason, it was showing up, but it was putting like the date as 2000. And I don't know how it was changing. I tried to contact iTunes. They pushed it back to me. And they go, yep. I don't know.
Yeah.
So eventually I went ahead and relocated our RSS, all of our episodes over to Libsyn. So we're now using a new service to host our podcasts. And now it's fine. The only problem is, it'll cost quite a bit for me to put all of our backlog of episodes. So I only put them like three most recent ones. All the rest are still up on our website. If you guys ever want to listen to them, you can also click and download them right from the site. And eventually I'll try to get those uploaded one by one onto the back end of the RSS feed. So the back catalog will still be there. But yes, if you guys were having problems this week, my apologies. Took a little bit of problems and troubleshooting, but now we're on Libsyn, which everyone else I've talked to swears by. So this should be a much better and secure system.
Grant.
Yes.
I have three thoughts.
Okay.
Three thoughts for you. Okay. First of all, ABC, always be contrite. That works better. Second of all, I believe this is probably Russian hackers because they're doing a lot of work right now.
Shit. Yeah. It might be.
I mean, they do everything. Why wouldn't they take down the TV dudes?
Oh, sure, Randy. You would say that. It's not the Russians. Jesus.
I mean, we're not the TV comrades.
It's probably the libtards that are doing this.
The TV comrades, by the way, only review old episodes of
Northern Exposure.
Northern Exposure. That's good.
You can see Russia from there.
Yeah, one Yakov Smirnov special that we watched.
Yakov Smirnov's little known HBO Russia series.
Yes, they're doing a watch through of the Americans, though.
And the third thought is. I don't know what the third thought is. I lost it. I lost the third thought. I had a thought. It's gone.
Sure you did.
Yep,
sure.
I did. Yeah.
You only have room in that brain for two thoughts. We all know this.
Yep. Russians and whatever the second thing was.
Well, once again, guys, we are over on Libsyn now, and I'll be uploading the other episodes. And to you Patreon listeners, we're not charging this week because there was a mess up last week, just so you guys know. My apologies once again for that. That was a big mess up. But we should be good to go. And now that I've moved past that, we got a great show today.
Yeah, we do.
We got a great show.
We're in peak TV right now. Peak TV.
Man. Well, this week we are talking about Sense8, which dropped its second season over on Netflix. We're talking about Fargo, which you're doing a little bit of a catch up on. We got to talk about The Leftovers because I'm addicted.
And because Grant holds a knife to our throat until we talk about The Leftovers.
This is true. And Better Call Saul, of course, we're going to be discussing.
Because I hold a knife to everyone's throat until we talk about Better Call Saul.
You do.
The show's just great. Everybody holds a knife to their own throat. I'm watching it.
It's like Blazing Saddles.
Yes.
We are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And before we get into all of that, listener questions. Oh, wait. I'm not going to do listener questions yet.
You jumped right past it.
I did. I totally jumped right past the iTunes. If you guys like us on iTunes, go ahead and give us a 5-star rating and write a little review. We'll read that here on the show. You guys can also help support us through patreon.com, which, hey, by the way, free week this week.
Yep, free week.
Jump on in. But yeah, if you go to patreon.com, we upload a bonus exclusive episode each week, I believe this week. Randy and Les are going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Volume 2. By the way, Grant.
Yeah.
I don't know about this whole free episode. It sounds a little communist to me. I think the Russians got to you.
It's capitalism. Oh. You guys, okay, this week it's communism.
This week it's communism. I'm saying the Russians got to. Yeah. If we're not charged for Patreon next week, it means the Russians have taken over this podcast. Oh, we'll slowly become the TV comrades.
Welcome to the TV dudes. TV comrades.
Welcome to TV comrades. I am Boris.
I am also Boris. Yeah, so those are the only two ways you guys can support us.
Nope. There's a third way.
Oh, shit.
Okay. I'm so proud of myself, you guys, because it was one of my friends came up with this one.
What? You have other people working on the methods of support?
He's so delighted by the notion of the third. He wants a third one, the third way to actually happen. This might actually happen. I have a friend, and his friend runs a burlesque show, a geeky burlesque show.
Okay.
And he said, there's probably a budget for which you could advertise the TV dudes with spinning tassels and everything. And I said, sir, get me a number.
Now, do the tassels spin fast enough to make like a persistent image?
Is I assume like that they spin and they make the letters TV dudes.
Oh, that would be rad.
So, third way to promote, get your friend who has a burlesque show to do TV dudes tassels.
Okay. On the tassels, is she going to write it on her stomach or something?
No, I think the tassels will be like shaped. I don't know how this all works.
Okay.
But it's TV dudes at a burlesque show. How is that not great?
If we're able to, we'll post it up on Facebook and Twitter.
It's a reasonable chance.
Yeah. So that's a thing you guys can also do out there to help support us, I guess. Thanks.
TV dudes MA?
Yes.
One other note, this month we are promoting our friend Melissa Giramonte's FemTV, which you can listen to, where she interviews females working in the entertainment industry, in particular the television industry. And you can check that out at FemTVpodcast.com. Go there and subscribe. She just released a brand new episode this week,
yep,
and it's fantastic. Go give her a little 5-star rating, write a little review on iTunes as well. Spread the love, guys. Go check out all of our stuff on the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
There you go. All right, let's jump into some listener questions, guys. If you guys like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter. You guys can ask us questions once a week. And we got a couple questions here.
Yep.
Got to go to our man, though, Nick Thighs. Nick Thighs. Which, by the way, I talked to Nick Thighs last night. And I did a little interview for his podcast, the UGO podcast,
yep, which
you guys can also go check out the UGO podcast. I think I'll be on it this week unless I did a bad job interviewing.
Yes.
It's possible. But yeah, go check that out. And he says, revenge plot update. Yes. As a local Wisconsinite, I have decided to choose a new target for my Game of Thrones themed revenge this week. Anyone just tuning in, by the way, he's been doing this like 2 months running.
Oh yeah,
Game of Thrones, yep, at least 2 months.
Yeah.
Yep, longer than George R. R. Martin's been working on the latest Game of Thrones book.
He says, with that in mind, I could use the TV dude's help in writing a certain pink letter. Ooh, nice. Oh, here we go.
Yep.
Dear Senator Paul Ryan. Oh, it's going to get political. This is Ramsey Bolton. You may know me from the HBO series Game of Thrones. It may surprise you that, despite being a fictional character, I am also one of your constituents. Go ahead. Prove me wrong. I would just like to say that I am a great fan of your past work. The way you cruelly treat the poor and sick without any concern for their well-being, and then to bold-faced lie to their faces about it is truly something to behold. From one sociopath to another, truly inspiring. Unfortunately, I can no longer support you with my vote if you continue down this road with your healthcare plan. I have a lot of people to torture here, and I can't do that if they keep dying because of lack of coverage. I just don't think you are thinking this through, Senator. In order to flay people living, they have to be living. It's my whole brand at stake here. I wish you the best of luck, hopefully passing legislature too cruel and short-sighted for someone called the Bastard of Bolton works out for you. Sincerely, Ramsey Bolton. P.S. Could you let me know where I can find Ted Cruz? Reek is gone, and I need a broken spear with only wistful memories of having a penis. Wow. he follows this wonderful letter up with, I would like to send more of these letters on a weekly basis. Any suggestion on what TV characters to write as?
Hannibal Lecter, for sure, 100%.
Oh, yes, yeah, yes.
Yeah.
I feel like there's got to be some other good possibilities in there.
Dexter.
Dexter, yeah.
Or rather, Dexter's, I guess people who've never seen Dexter, I could spoil the shit out of Dexter at this point.
He's a lumberjack.
His brother in the first season.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Man, you should.
I don't recommend sending celebrities or politicians painted fingernails or anything like that. Like,
no, that's a bad idea.
Yeah, but you should post these online.
Oh, yeah.
I think a collection of these letters from different TV characters would be fantastic. What's Andrew Dwyer's FBI guy?
Oh, Burt Macklin.
Burt Macklin.
Burt Macklin, I think, would be very timely right now.
Man, Burt Macklin should be head of the FBI.
Well, you saw that Chris Pratt offered up his services, right?
Oh, no, that's amazing.
Yeah, he tweeted at them with a picture of Burt Macklin and said he could offer up his resume.
Oh, man, I want a Johnny Karate presidential fitness.
It'd be tricky, though, because as was noted, Burt Macklin was last seen. He was in trouble. He was on the outs because he'd stolen the president's rubies. So I don't know if he could really be the FBI director. But in Trump's America, I don't know. Maybe that's not a problem.
All bets are off, Randy.
The Jennings from the Americans could certainly penetrate.
Oh, my God, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Definitely keep writing these. I think this is just brilliant.
Actually, Bachman from Silicon Valley writing with his concerns would be good.
Yes.
And anyone from Veep.
Oh, man. Oh, yes. Anyone. Oh, yes, definitely. All right, next question comes to us, and thank you, Nick. Next question comes to us from Zach McLernan, who says, "Praise be the fruit, great and pious TV dudes. It might surprise you to know that Hulu was actually taking steps to dial back its political-minded ad campaign for The Handmaid's Tale to attempt to keep the show more broadly appealing."
Broadly, I get it.
But after the overwhelming success, they decided to embrace it again. This case has, however, been used to mock Hulu, but also not only Hulu, but also multiple shows who have recently marketed as being appealing for their relevance on today's current political climate. Does Hulu deserve the criticism, or is it okay to use our current cultural divisions as an ad tool under his eye?
Fuck you. We might as well get something out of it.
I feel like on this particular case, I would give Hulu a pass. Frankly, there's no way to advertise Handmaid's Tale and not have... I mean, it's going to feel apropos. Like, there's been an assault on women's health.
Yep.
Whether you believe it's happening or not, a huge part of the country does.
It's part of the conversation, and you can't just kind of pretend it's not happening because it's very disingenuous. Why not lean into the curve?
Yeah, the thing I would give Hulu endless shit for is if they went through that entire ad campaign meticulously pretending that this had nothing to do with, like, oh, nope, it's just a fantasy book, doesn't have any bearing on anything.
Right.
I mean, how are you going to keep Margaret Atwood from speaking in public ever?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, The Americans isn't, like, actively trying to do wink and nods in their advertisement.
But they should.
But they totally could.
Like, when Person of Interest ran their told you Comic-Con, their badge was a little puzzle anagram that said told you so.
Here's what I think. I think Hulu deserves a lot of credit for restraint because they didn't give a co-executive producer credit to Mike Pence.
Oh, Jesus.
Because clearly this all came out of his wet dreams. Not that he has wet dreams, because those are sinful.
We're very political this episode.
I don't think there's anyone listening to our podcast who thinks Mike Pence is a good dude. No one.
There might be a couple.
No.
They might also just like our witty banter and our insights into TV shows.
Oh, well then, sorry.
Yeah, we're sorry to have lost you as an audience. No, we're not. All right, well, let's move on to our next question. Ross Brown says, after watching American Gods, what other modern influences could become one of the new gods? Personally, I think Star Wars, as well as the very short-lived god of Pokemon Go.
Okay, I believe that Disney actually is a god. I think it's probably got Disney is a god at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a mouse like running around?
It probably is. Yeah,
just like Nancy spider.
I'm just saying they own Star Wars and Indiana Jones and Marvel. Okay, look, I worship Disney, all right? Is that what you want to hear?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes, I worship Disney.
McDonald's, fast food, the god of fast food.
The god of fast food makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I actually think the internet sort of should be more than one god. I feel like there should be a god of, like, trolls, of internet trolls. There should be, like, a hacker god.
That'd be Trump. Trump's the god of trolls.
There's the Unikitty god of like, yeah, silly gifts and
the Tumblr
goats.
God?
Yeah.
The Tumblr goddess?
Oh, it's just like always crying about everything.
The Tumblr non-binary god. Yes. I feel like all of these different subsets of the internet could have, there's like an Amazon, there should be an Amazon God that is all about the commerce on the internet and that kind of thing. I think that all
TV
of those
dudes
could be,
God.
They could, yes. TV dudes God.
I mean, let's, we, maybe not God.
Demigods. Yeah, like
Candy,
Hercules.
Candy yeah. Crush is definitely.
Yeah.
Got a temple somewhere.
Yeah.
The podcast God would be so nerdy.
There's like, there should be a whole internet pantheon.
All right. All right. Pop music god, something like that. Yeah, I could see different things in current culture being these new gods.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. They're all annoying.
Our gods are going to suck.
Benjamin Hamill says, so I've been watching the Hell on Wheels show, and after a fairly uneven first season, I think the show's actually become pretty solid TV in its second and third seasons.
There are three seasons of Hell on Wheels?
I was stunned by this as well. I was told that seasons two and three were bad, and that was, or were much better than season one, and that was my reaction, is there are more
three
than...
Three seasons of this show?
I did not get into season one.
He says, not must-see TV, but if you like Westerns, I would recommend it. Anyway, Hell on Wheels has a character that has become my favorite side character of any TV show. The Swede, played by Christopher Heyerdahl, is so wonderfully crazy, and I can't keep my eyes off him when he's on screen. Which, when I watched the pilot, I remember the Swede was just immediately captivating.
I agree. The Swede was the best part of Hell on Wheels that I saw, too.
Yeah. So my question, what are some characters from second or third tier TV shows that you absolutely love? Like Grant, are there any characters from Sons of Anarchy you still think about? Maybe Opie? Opie was fantastic, actually. Yes. Randy, are there any standout characters from Real Rob or Two Broke Girls that we should be aware of?
Son of a bitch. Okay, look. You get Sons of Anarchy, which you actually watched. Uh-huh. It was you hate watching. I have never watched Real Robert from Broke Girls. That's a joke. There was no other show that he could have mentioned that was
Is it a joke?
It's a joke. I've never watched those shows. I saw the pilot of Two Broke Girls. I'll never watch another episode.
So some shows that are just kind of meh, but they're like, whoa, this character is just like, what are you doing on this show?
Yeah.
It's like, I have to do this Rolodex of like, what's a crappy show?
Yeah, what's a crap show that I watched?
And was there someone good on that crappy show?
Yeah, I mean, there's almost always like some character. Oh, you know what? Reaper, which was not a great show, but was a solid show, had Tyler Labine played the sidekick on that.
That introduced and that was me a great to Tyler
character.
Labine.
Yeah, it was a great character on sort of a not...
Yeah, he played a sock.
And actually, on that same show, and really any show Ray Wise is on, it doesn't matter if the show is good or not, Ray Wise's character is going to be good.
Hulu has an original called Battleground. And Ray Wise is on it.
That was a CBS show.
Was that a CBS show?
Brief, short-lived. It was Vince Gilligan developed it before Breaking Bad, and then they picked it up after Breaking
Bad.
It's
remarkably good for small scale. I mean, it feels like they made it for $20, but and then they paid all 20 of that to Ray Wise for a minute.
That's actually a pretty good move.
But I can't remember the character's name, but he's the sidekick to the main character.
Okay.
And I went back and found the web series, which I despise watching web series on YouTube, but it was a series of little 10-minute comedy shorts called like Dorm Life or some that starred that guy. He absolutely owns all his scenes. Huh. I can't believe he hasn't turned up on anything else.
Now, is it the actor or was the character like
the character? Because I did really not like him in his previous thing.
Okay.
So I'm hoping somebody else will hand that guy something good to do, because he really walked a great line of being the comic relief that knew he was covering. Like, right. Only being funny because he's really bitter. And he did more with that character than a first role.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if anything else is just like coming to mind right now.
Yeah, bad shows don't stick in my head.
No.
I got to make room for all the good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first one that jumped to mind was a character in a good show I liked, because we were talking about Black Donnelly's earlier. The main narrator of that show is a sidekick that isn't really friends with anybody he's talking about. And you start to realize that as he's telling the story, that none of these guys like him and he's not really part of these stories. He really wanted to be. And so as he tells the story, like he'll appear in different parts of the narration, or someone will call him out on like, how do you know that detail? And he'll go, then it was a white Cadillac instead. And it'll just start the scene over. And you start to realize just like how untrue this show might be.
Michael Gustini says, network cancellations are in full swing, and my question for you dudes is, are there any non-CW network shows that you care about in the slightest anymore? The only show I even feel the slightest bit sad about getting canceled was Timeless.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about Timeless. We'll talk about it when we get to the news a little bit. But
And Pitch.
That there are a couple. Nothing that I was heartbroken to lose. The show I would have been heartbroken to lose is The Good Place, and it's getting renewed.
Yeah, Good Place got picked up.
But there are a couple network shows I care about. The Good Place, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Anything Mike Schur does, I guess.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine, yeah. The Good Place, The Mick, I'm really into. Les and I were just talking about how much we like that.
Yeah, I need to catch up with The Mick.
Which, you know, those are mainly comedies.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything else that's not tied to a streaming service that I'm really watching ongoing that I'm worried about getting axed.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
I can't really think of dramas, you know, now that like Hannibal's not on air anymore that I'm into.
Yeah, I'm sad Timeless got axed, but I'm not shocked by it.
Yeah.
I do actually feel like the time travel axe is what happened to our episode last week. I think when iTunes reassigned the clock. We got lumped in with all the time travel shows. And
That's probably true.
That's the problem.
So it wasn't Russians, it was time travel. Or time traveling Russians.
Got us again. All right, last question comes to us from Paul Manpilli, who says, so, since your main man Kyle is off to the UK for vacation, good riddance, Kyle. Just kidding.
Pip, cheerio, Kyle. That's how I told him to talk the whole time.
Is that how
he's going to get beat up, seriously beat up in England.
Paul says, do you guys have any favorite British characters, not actors, mind you, in TV shows?
Everyone on Red Dwarf.
Are they all British?
Yeah, they're all British. They're from British in space.
British in space.
I mean, okay, maybe Cat. Maybe the cat's not British because he was born in space.
Hmm.
But Lister... And the hologram is very British.
I loved Giles and Wesley.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly Wesley. I loved Alexis Dinosov and what he did with that character across it and Angel.
Yeah, I agree.
And Spike, speaking of British characters that were not played by British actors.
Yes, there's a lot of that in American TV.
Yeah, there's a lot of American characters played by British actors.
Yeah.
On the flip side.
And vice versa. They have American actors play British characters and British actors play American characters.
Yeah, I think Hugh Laurie as House doing a bad British accent is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Like he can do his American accent putting on a shitty British accent.
Everyone in Spaced.
Oh,
especially here's the one thing. I love Daisy. Like Daisy is the character. I absolutely love that character. And she's more or less the straight woman in the whole thing for the most part. But I really like that character. I'm sure there are other British shows.
Simmons from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Isn't she your favorite?
Oh, God.
Isn't she your favorite, Randy?
She's definitely among the best parts of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
This is true.
Yeah. Okay, guys, a bunch of stuff got renewed and a bunch of stuff got canceled.
Dum, dum, dum.
What's That's it going to be? Okay, That's cool. It. All right, we're going to be back after
break.
Yeah,
we're going to specifics this week.
Lay it on us. What we got?
Okay, so American Gods Season 2 has been ordered by Starz, which, no shocker, American Gods has done very well for Starz.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good.
I mean, everyone's tuning in because it's just like... eye candy with Slade and Fuller working on it.
Yeah, it's friggin' gorgeous, and they're sticking to the book. I mean, everybody was excited about it, but then it hit the ground running. It didn't just land like a whip.
I keep hearing people go, though, what the fuck is going on from, like, every corner? Like, no one knows what's going on, and I think that's a valid criticism that they're really holding it out. Maybe one more episode or two, and then they better start.
Man, if only there were like a cheat transcript of it that you could like read ahead of time.
Yeah,
like in the Muppets when they grab the script. Like if only.
But I'm gonna say bullshit on that because last week Randy said he read over half the book still not knowing what the fuck's going
on. That's actually true. Yeah. I think I'm on chapter 2 million and I still don't know what's happening.
The Bill Quist scene is straight out of the
It's straight out of the book. Yeah. So the ratings on this, by the way, 975,000 viewers, that's the premiere, and 700,000 viewers in the second one. Those are not huge numbers for TV. Those are tiny numbers for TV.
But for Stars?
But for Stars, they're huge.
Also,
people are paying for
let's
that.
Just applaud the sheer marketing brilliance of making sure that American Gods is Sunday night premiere TV.
Yeah.
And I love that Stars drops, at least on their app, they drop it sometime in the dead of night so that I wake up Sunday mornings to American Gods.
Nice.
All right. What else have we got? We got a bunch of new stuff that's been... Okay, let's talk cancellations.
Yes.
So, Imaginary Mary. I don't know if you guys remember that show. I don't.
It was one season.
Yes,
and
Jen Elfman had an imaginary friend.
I think that's correct.
Yeah. It was like trying to do Ted.
Yep. Dr. Ken, which is a mercy killing. That was a terrible show.
That one lasted two seasons. I don't even know how it got a second season.
That's the Ken Jeong.
Yeah, Ken Jeong. Yeah, that had a second season.
That made
season.
Two seasons?
Yeah.
Jesus.
And American Crime. Oh, Greg will be sad.
That one got three seasons. I heard the ratings were never big.
Yeah.
I've been confused this whole time. I thought there was American Crime Story.
Yeah.
And that was it. I just assumed that we were not saying the whole thing.
Nope. American Crime was a different anthology
two
show.
Two shows.
Yeah. Also an anthology show.
And they came out the same year.
And it was
different crime?
Yeah. Different. It was John Ridley. It was different. John Ridley from 12 Years a Slave. It was his show. They filmed a scene in my store. They used to film in Austin. And then the third season they moved because our state government shut down all our incentives because they suck. Yeah. And but it's like just like American Crime Story and just like American Horror Story had a sort of a cast of players. So it had like Felicity Huffman and I forget who all was in it, but it was like good cast. And they did three different seasons totally unrelated to American Crime Story, O.J. Simpson thing.
That's so odd.
Yeah. But anyway, no more of that. That's gone. Also, this is kind of crazy. Tim, the Toolman Taylor's Last Man Standing.
Tim Allen, yeah.
No, Tim the Toolman Taylor.
Gotcha.
Last Man Standing was at CBS and was canceled.
Six seasons,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But its ratings were not bad. That's the weird thing. This is a super Trump time friendly show. Like, it is a... Men should be men, and what's with all this crazy...
Like, this one would cater to that other side of the political spectrum.
And CBS canceled it, despite pretty solid ratings. So I don't know what happened there.
Wow.
I'm going to assume Tim Allen is dealing drugs on the set again or something.
Yeah, because that shows a steaming pile and caters to a shit demographic.
Maybe they looked in the mirror and said, what am I doing with my life?
No, Grant, this canceled. Is CBS.
No, there's no way that happened.
Yeah, CBS. I don't know what you have to do to get canceled at CBS, but clearly Tim Allen did it.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, so we got a bunch of new stuff coming up. Oh, Taken got picked up for a second season with a new showrunner. And
what happened to the first showrunner?
Yeah,
he was taken.
It's going to be his second season of trying to rescue
him. What season two is about.
If they completely retooled the show and made it a meta comedy about the star of Taken hunting down the producer, I would watch every episode of that show.
I'd watch the shit out of that. If it were a show about getting canceled after season one and having to go find your kidnap, oh man, I'd watch the crap out of that.
Yeah, if it's a TV actor playing a badass, using the special skills he developed, playing a guy with special skills.
Gets no other jobs, just cracks, decides he's really going to go do it. Yep.
I would watch the hell out of that.
That sounds ridiculous.
That sounds way better than what's going to happen.
Come on, Amazon pilot season has definitely done worse,
yes,
than this.
For sure. All right, then some pickups. Some interesting pickups. So, Deadpool animated TV show coming from Donald Glover to FX on 2018.
I really felt like that was trolling me. There's no way that that's a true sentence.
He's a workhorse.
I get him figuring out a way to somehow. It's just so weird.
But why
is Deadpool? I have never had a connection to him with that character.
Yep,
particularly.
Me neither. But we're the exceptions, Les, because people love.
Oh,
Deadpool.
No, it sounds like a great. I love Deadpool. I know you are definitely not in that camp. But
I am not in that camp.
But yeah, I think it's hysterical. I think Donald Glover's friggin' amazing. I'll watch anything that dude.
Yeah.
Puts out. I just really didn't see this pairing of projects. I really thought somebody was trolling me with a machine-generated headline.
Yeah, I didn't think this was going to happen either. But the funny thing is, much as I dislike Deadpool, I like the Deadpool movie, and I love Donald Glover. Someone will watch this.
Yeah. Rad.
Seth Meyers has a show, AP Bio. It's been picked up at NBC.
Uh-huh. And that's the Glenn Howerton one from It's Always Sunny.
Yes. So this is why Glenn Howerton may not be on Always Sunny the next season.
That's why they're all delaying for a year, which we're going to have to talk about. We're going to be talking about Fargo.
Yep.
Which had a Rob McElhenney.
Yep.
Cameo.
So the showrunner on Late Night with Seth Meyers is one of the executive producers. Lorne Michaels is involved, of course. The pitch on this one, Glenn Howerton is a philosophy scholar who takes a job at a high school advanced placement biology teacher when his bid for a dream job falls short. However, the new instructor makes it clear he will not be teaching any biology and uses his class full of honor students for his own purposes. Oh, in addition to Howerton and is Patton Oswalt? Oh, nice. We'll also feature Lyric Lewis, Mary Sohn, Aparna Brielle, Jacob McCarthy, and Nick Payne. I don't know who any of those people are.
No, but that sounds great.
Yeah, it's a great concept.
Let's do this.
And with this and the Mick, are the Always Sunny people just going to always play terrible people?
It seems like it.
And I'm good with that.
That's their wheelhouse.
I'm good with that. There's a Judge Dredd live action TV show in the works.
I'm very excited about this.
Judge Dredd Mega City 1.
Yeah.
That they actually have a poster, and it was in Entertainment Weekly, right? Like an actual legit publication?
It's in development. It feels kind of early. But
you see the people that are involved?
Yeah.
It's produced by Mark Stern, who did Battlestar Galactica, and Stuart Ford, who just did Hacksaw Ridge, alongside Jason and Chris Kingsley, who were the dudes who made Dredd. Yep. Which was amazing. So there might be a chance that this is Carl Urban.
I would say, I know. As someone pointed out, I mean, he's willing. He did Almost Human.
Yeah. And he totally wanted to do this character so bad. So why wouldn't he?
And I believe you need his partner from Almost Human to be a judge on this,
now,
too.
Now, will we give them shit if the advertising leans towards the current political climate?
No, it'd be amazing.
In fact, if they could also bring his partner from Dredd.
Yeah.
The metahuman lady that...
Anderson?
Yeah, Judge Anderson, yeah. Yeah,
she
they
also
say
awesome.
They're going to follow a group of judges. They maintain their ironclad grip as judge, jury, and executioners. I'm in. I really hope this happens.
I really want multiple seasons of this show because eventually I want the Judge Death season.
I want this to be just fucking brutal. Yeah. You put it on, please maintain what Dredd delivered
this,
for
this
us.
This should air after Game of Thrones with a title card before it that says this is now going to be for mature.
Or, you know what? This is perfect Starz branding.
Oh, yeah.
Starz is the Sex and Violence Network.
This is Ash versus the Evil Dead cranked up. Yeah, perfect. This is... so many bullets through faces, Jesus.
Hey, you guys like Superman, right? You like Superman?
He's all right. Is he
still likable?
Yeah. How about, would you like to see what he was like, what it was like on Krypton when he was not even a kid yet?
Are you doing a Patton Oswalt thing?
Nope. Because I realized I couldn't do it. I was like, would you like to see him as a kid? Because it's not even that. Sci-fi has a prequel series called Krypton.
You want to see what his grandpa was up to?
It is created by David Goyer.
Oh, great.
It's been in development for a while. It is going to focus on Superman's grandfather, whose House of El was ostracized and shamed as he fights to redeem his family's honor and save his beloved world from chaos, which none of that shit is going to matter because the whole planet's going to blow up in like 60 years.
And does anybody else feel like the grown-ups have come along, taken away the comic books, and restructured the story into something adult and acceptable to read? Like,
yes.
Like, okay, you were super into like a guy who could fly and helps out people and punches Nazis and shit. Okay, here instead is a story about that guy's grandfather who works in a lab and has political problems in their planet.
Yeah.
You will stop with this nonsense, boy.
Yeah, if this was a show about Superman's grandfather's science adventure on crazy-ass Krypton, I'd be all in. If he's going to go out every week and capture strange alien beasts on the tundras, whatever. But yeah, this is going to be political maneuverings in the science council of Krypton. Fuck that.
This is the Superman show that Mr. Banks would make, and I want to watch Mary Poppins Superman show. Like,
the only hope we have is that it will be accidentally as bonkers as Gotham.
Accidentally, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
George R. R. Martin, I don't know if you guys know that name. He's...
Is that the guy who likes to kill people?
Yeah, yeah. Cool, he has he has a show on HBO. I think Ballers.
that's right.
But he had a movie in 1987, I believe, called Night Flyers.
Night Flyers.
That is about a.
So wait, did he finish the book this year?
No. This is about a crew of explorers on a ship, and the ship that runs into a mysterious alien spacecraft, and they discover the ship's artificial intelligence. It's sort of a horror exploration kind of thing. Well, they're going to do this as a TV show.
Okay.
Courtesy of Sci-Fi.
Get finished writing, George. What the fuck?
The thing is, George R. R. Martin has a bunch of other shows. He was a sci-fi writer long before Game of Thrones. He has a huge back catalog they can get to. And so, yeah, so they're going to do a Night Flyers. This actually is a good premise, like the notion of sort of space exploration. Plus, sci-fi has a good, they have The Expanse.
They can
do this kind of thing. So maybe it'll be good.
All right.
I got to say, Randy, when you first told me about this, yep. I was imagining Night Flight. The late night video thing, and I was trying my damnedest to figure out what possible connection George R. R. Martin had to like my vague memories of a non-MTV music video.
You'd be surprised.
One last thing.
Okay.
Not directly TV related.
All right.
It's more related to comic books. Have you guys visited HailHydra.com?
No.
If you type in Hail-Hydra.com, hit enter on your browser.
Okay.
I'm hoping people are doing it right now. I don't want to give them the full experience.
Go ahead. So if you go to your computers,
you
guys.
Go to your browser and type hail-hydra.com. You're now looking at the site for the web. You're now looking at the White House website.
Watching that switch over to whitehouse.gov is hysterical.
Some enterprising individual nabbed the URL hailhydra.com and redirected it to the White House.
This is our political episode.
Yes. That's just great. I'm all in favor of this. So, yes.
Wow. Yep. That fits. All right, guys, we're going to take a break and we'll be back to discuss some shows. Sense8 is back.
Yes.
I didn't watch this because I never watched the first season, but you guys are super excited about it.
Yes, I was very happy with this. Les, you liked the first season, right?
I did, and I will fully admit that show took longer to get into than almost anything that I've pushed through. I had stopped watching it after first couple of episodes and gave it a long gap of time, and I had several friends that whose media tastes I really share, like folks that I've known for a long time, who came back again and again and went, man, are you still not watching this? And then finally somebody said, please push through to the like third or fourth episode. Yeah. And if you're still not hooked, I'll shut up.
Yeah.
And by the end of episode four, what was happening to these people was making sense. I'd gotten far enough into their lives that I cared about the individual storyline. And I'd also gotten far enough into the sci-fi plot to be interested in what was happening to them.
Yeah.
And it, more than most shows I've ever seen, it builds consistently from there.
Yeah.
So that the end of the first season really left me in a spot where I was going, shit, I want season two now.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about this. This is a show that would never happen on a network or even a cable show.
No, like, had I not been able to binge it, could not have done it.
It's got to be on Netflix. Like they're the ones who are going to have the patience in there, and the viewers are going to have the patience for it.
Week to week, this had been horrible.
Oh, yeah, it'd been awful. But yeah, the other thing is, the reason it needs so much space to develop is this is not an easy high concept to explain. Like, I imagine the elevator pitch to Netflix was, hi, we're the Wachowskis. This is J. Michael Straczynski. We have a bunch of awards. We want to make a show for you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure they didn't tell them what the show was about in the pitch, because there's no elevator pitch for this.
I'm sure they went, Cloud Atlas, Speed Racer. No, we're good. Sorry. Is that just me?
No, but The Matrix writes a big old check that still hasn't run out for them.
Still, that M. Night Shyamalan still seems to be running off of his first two films.
Well, and the thing is, the Wachowskis are, not everybody loves their stuff. I actually, I really like Speed Racer.
Same
haven't
here.
Seen Cloud Atlas. But I like a lot of their stuff, and I can see bits and pieces of the Matrix sequels, and I'm like, oh, I see what they were trying to do. And
I mean, I liked Jupiter Ascending. Someone's rant about Timeless getting canceled and how, like, damn it, you've all pitched about wanting speculative fiction and now nobody watched this.
Yeah.
And I felt like that about Jupiter Ascending. Like, I heard some people mock Eddie Redmayne's vocal effect and everything. And I kept thinking, like, wow, the rest of the year people just complain about endless sequels and remakes.
Yeah.
This is completely original, but I'll be alone in the theater. Fuck it.
Well, the other thing is, J. Michael Straczynski, he's a guy who's done some Oscar-winning screenplays, but he's also best known for Babylon 5. But the thing is, all these people, they have real strengths. Like, the Wachowskis are very imaginative. They have sort of, they do philosophical sci-fi in a way that nobody else does it. And JMS does ambitious, planned out stories and pretty strong character work. And they both have a tendency to cheese. The Wachowskis have a tendency to sort of go off into weird, forget there needs to be a story kind of places. And I feel like they're covering for each other's weaknesses.
I do too. I feel like this is stronger than either one of them would make this show separately.
But season one was all about finding about these sense eights, these eight people who connect. They can sort of see through each other's eyes and touch, you know, things. They can basically take over for their senses.
It's a group of people who aren't psychic. They're psychically bonded to each other.
Yeah.
But they don't know what's happening to them.
Yeah.
And the only people who seem to are terrifying.
Yes.
Like, there's an organization hunting them, and they seem to be the only people with info. So you're as confused as they are for the first season.
Yeah. And now that we get into season two, which started with the Christmas special, which we all liked.
Yeah. I thought that was an odd move, and the way season two feels now, I understand why they did the Christmas special.
Yeah.
It gave you this pause, kind of room to breathe, to remember where everybody was and to reestablish, because at the end of season one, you'd finally gotten to a point where you knew all the characters, mm-hmm. you had a rough idea of the basic mechanics of how this was working for them and what they were doing power-wise.
Yeah.
And it felt ready to fire on all cylinders.
Yeah.
And they took a moment to remind you of that. And then in season two, I feel like it still gets to do those big family moments that are tear jerking and huge and sentimental and earnest, and also get to be this great, kind of spy thriller action thing.
Yeah.
Because they have at this point so well established the rules of how it works.
Right.
And who these characters are.
Well, it lets them swap out abilities more quickly.
Yes.
Like, we don't have to have the moment where they all look at each other and we figure out, like, they don't point to the camera at the audience and say, look, Caphias is taking over because Sun doesn't know how to drive, but Caphias does. Yep. Like, they just do it.
Everybody's already had their scene where you understand. And a couple of characters have had scenes where they go, I don't know why I'm here with you. And the other person look at him and go, oh, come on. We know how this works by now. Yeah. If you're here with me, then it's because you feel like this. You only ever come see me when you're angry or right. when you're, yeah. you know, if you were sad, you'd be with Leto.
But there's an action scene in every episode, I think. Mm-hmm. But there's also some great emotional moments. We were talking about this before we got on, like the scene with Leto at the gay pride parade. Mm-hmm. Leto's whole story about sort of coming out and what that means for his career is really interesting. It's one of the better coming out stories I've seen on TV.
The way they handle Nomi and her deal with her family and her sister.
The scene with her dad in the church when he sort of stood amazing. Up for her was amazing.
It echoed back to the one of the first scenes with her and Amanita, where they talk about their very first pride, and I think it's she balls out crying Amanita says, I would take her, and she says, no, that's, I'm not crying because of what she said, I'm crying because nobody's ever stood up for me. And it was that, like, a similar moment. But yeah, it does these huge moments where I find myself tearing up going, you show. But yet every once in a while I remember that this is the Wachowskis.
Yeah.
And I know I'd said this when we talked about this last season. Season one had all these CG moments.
Yeah.
That are so subtle that you forget that this is the Bullet Time guys. Like, this is, or Bullet Time siblings.
Yeah.
And this is the folks that did Speed Racer. And like, they're known for big visual effects centerpieces, sometimes at the expense of the rest of the story.
Right, for sure.
And I feel like Sense 8 is, they have hit their masterclass level. Like, this feels like they are nonchalantly weaving some really intricate CG work.
Yeah.
The the way the powers work, the way their psychic stuff works, they visually flip between one another, and they do it in different ways to show whether someone's just watching over their shoulder or whether someone's actually driving.
Right.
And the seamlessness with which they switch these actors, and they take the whole cast globally and they shoot on location.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine how many times they reshoot scenes with people in different places hitting the exact same marks.
Yeah.
And then the amount of CG, tiny little tweaks to this show has to be incredibly intricate to make. And it all culminates occasionally in these, not throwaway, but just so beautifully integrated that you don't pause and think bullet time.
Yeah.
There's a fight scene in a restaurant with Wolfgang where another person in there has a full cluster of other sensates as well. And so you're watching two people who basically have like a tracer trippy echo of seven other people who are also fighting and looking around the room and giving them information. It's insane.
Yeah.
And visually just gorgeous.
Yeah. One of the things I really liked that they did this season, they really wanted to emphasize the family that is the cluster, that they're all sort of an unusual kind of family, even though they're not physically always in the same space. And so they did a lot more scenes where like the whole group was there. Even if they were their support, like the whole group is there at Pride and they're all costumed up and they're all like, even though Leto is the only member of the cluster who's actually in Brazil.
Yes.
They're all there celebrating Pride with him.
Yeah.
And the fight with Wolfgang and in the restaurant, they're all there. There's that moment, which it's just on the edge of cheesy, but it works, where he stands up and his cluster stands up behind him.
Yep, and then hers stands up behind her.
It's just this side of cheesy. Like, it could have not worked, but it really works.
Yeah.
And I like that they did a lot more of them, like, all coming together as opposed to just swapping out one or two people.
The non-sensate characters that they've brought in, I'm so glad have worked better. Amanita's great. Like, she's been great from the start.
How great is Bug?
Bug is what it actually made me think of the question earlier about psychic. This show could suck, and I hate every other bit of it. And Bug is amazing because he shouldn't be. He's skeevy. I mean,
he should be annoying as hell.
And he should have been a terrible person. Yeah. You keep the first time they introduce him, like, you really keep expecting him to keep putting his foot in his mouth and be terrible because he almost makes a like, damn, Mike, you're hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's so earnestly lovable.
Well, he's so guileless.
Yes. Guileless.
Yeah.
In the Christmas special, they're getting ready to go, to the, I think, Gay Men's Chorus or something. And you can tell he's like, I'll be hanging out with my virtual family, which I love that they keep drawing that parallel of like, do you understand what it's like to feel connected to people you don't physically see? Well, yes, of course we all do.
Yeah.
But I love when they look at him and go, well, are you ready to go? And that actor pulls off that really so beautifully.
Yeah.
And then they do, they do it again this season, I think, taking him to the wedding.
Oh
God, when they share what's actually going on with Bug.
That was so good. When he learns what's going on, and he, of course, is delighted and has so many questions. Yeah.
I love that they have not agonized too much over telling their friends in this.
No.
Although,
it is a little weird that Leto has not told Ronaldo.
That's true.
That he's never... Is Ronaldo, right?
Hernando.
Okay. It's a little weird. Also, one of the things I really love about the show, and this came up in our timeless discussion on my Facebook page, is that it is so effortlessly, but clearly importantly and deliberately diverse.
Mm-hmm.
There is every kind of relationship, Leto and Hernando and the girl whose name I'm blanking on.
Danny.
Are in a very strange polyamorous relationship.
Yep.
And Bug and Amanita and
Nomi
have a relationship that's not, it's the same kind of thing. It's three people, but it's very different than the one the other three people have. And then, you know, there's Leto being gay. They introduced a bi character, I think, for the first time in this season.
Girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah. Caffius' girlfriend, yeah. And they also just like, they've got racial, they've got geographical, they're very heavily, I mean, not surprising for the Wachowskis that they would be sensitive to LGBT issues.
But this show goes out of its way. The first season felt like, in the planning of it, because this has to be an intricately planned show.
Yeah.
But in the planning of it, it feels like they sat down and made sure that everything has some equal time.
Yeah.
Because I noticed that in the first season, too.
Yeah.
It's not that there aren't straight relationships on the show.
Mm-hmm. No, there are, sure.
It's not the L word or something where you're primarily pointing at one demographic group.
Yeah.
There's one of every conceivable breakdown of relationships. I'm frankly amazed they've not had an asexual character.
I was wondering about that, too, and I wouldn't be surprised to see one introduced.
There'll be one eventually, I'm willing to bet.
Yeah.
I can't be the first person that said that.
Whatever the hell, the guy from Speed Racer on the motorcycle who's connected to like 700 people, that guy's another kind of sexuality, too. I don't know exactly what is creepy.
The Sensate VD.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
That guy, I love that character. I loved him in Speed Racer, so I was happy to see that actor turn up.
That's who he is,
and,
yes.
Yeah, I thought that was a great fun. I was worried about them recasting Caffeus, but this guy did great.
Yep. He's so much bigger than the other actor that the jump in that guy's frame was weird, but his face has that same sweet, innocence to it.
And his whole story about running for politics in a corrupt part of Africa is really interesting.
Yeah. And if he, I see why they cast him. I feel like that guy sat down in a room and they looked him in the eyes and went, okay, you can say stuff like this without me thinking that you've got a nefarious plan. There's no ulterior motive to that guy's
Other big story for me is Will and Riley could easily have been boring, the boring white kids. And they gave them a lot of the heavy lifting to do with the PPO story. PPO?
BPO.
BPO.
Yeah, biological preservation.
Right. And so we have some pretty heavy stuff with Will. You have not seen yet. The last couple episodes are kind of Will-focused.
I just saw the deal with his dad.
Okay, and that's a pretty big moment for him.
That was pretty bad, yeah.
But there's some stuff with Will where he basically gets to be the big hero of the piece. Mm-hmm. And Wolfgang is having the same kind of thing with the other cluster. But everybody has a story arc. Everybody's story arc is interesting. There's no part where I was like, get off this character and go to the next one. There's eight characters to service, and I'm interested in all of them.
Yeah, and that's what amazed me in season one was even as I was trying to figure out what was happening to them sci-fi-wise, I was amazed that I actually gave a shit about each of these people's show.
Yeah.
Like, the Leto show was interesting to me. Nomi's show was interesting to me.
Yeah, this was already a show I liked in season one, but I think with season two, it's taken a step up toward being even it's a must-watch.
It's finally getting to do... fulfill its promise. Like,
yeah.
Now that you've built this car, we get to drive it.
Yep. And everybody should go and watch it because it's all on Netflix.
Yes.
No.
Grant, you should go watch it.
I'm still here, guys.
Oh. I thought you were one of my sensates and you weren't actually really here.
I don't even know what it means.
I know. It's awesome.
are you a leftover? I don't know how that show works.
Are you a Better Call Saul?
Does this mean like whenever you jerk off, I feel it? Is that how Sensate works?
No, Grant, that's our special connection as TV dudes.
It's so weird. Why do we have that connection?
I don't know. I don't know why we did that.
Let's go back in time.
Why did we even get that surgery? Let's go back in time and fix it.
So who left and moved to California and why?
All right, let's talk about Fargo, guys. Because we last checked in with, episode 1 and 2, but now we've seen 3 and 4.
Well, I've seen 3.
3 and some of 4.
Just three.
Okay, well, so we pick up with Nora going to L.A. and
it's not Nora.
What's her name?
I don't know, Carrie Coon's character, but it's not Nora. Nora's in Leftovers.
Yeah, but isn't she Nora everywhere?
No, she's not Nora everywhere.
Because it's the best character, Nora. Okay, fine. We pick up with Officer... she's got such a weird last name, too. Or Chief. She's Chief.
Yes.
We'll just call her Chief. Master Chief.
Master Chief.
And she's basically investigating what ultimately leads to like a red herring, I guess.
So this is what I loved about this. This is the kind of thing that could be seen as very self-indulgent. Because this whole episode...
No, let's not say that it wasn't a little bit.
A little bit. But I actually love when Noah Hawley gets self-indulgent. So none of this matters to the story.
Ultimately, but I think it's more fascinating world building, right?
Because it's all about a red herring in the investigation that has nothing to do with the murder. And it's all about a character who's dead and has been dead since episode one.
And one might say has been dead since the 70s.
And it's all about story. It's all about backstory for him that has nothing to do with the story.
But it really does inform her character, I think.
Yeah.
With what she's kind of going through, what she's trying to address here. And yeah, I mean, the portions where it intertwines the pulpy 70s sci-fi novel in an animated form into there to be a bit of a metaphor for her journey and struggle and the ultimate purpose of life and I guess
achieving redemption in some way.
Yeah.
I thought it was cute, but I don't know. I also felt like it did it a few too many times.
I guess so. I think it just did every commercial break. I can see that one being a little self-indulgent. The rest of the story, though, I don't know why this resonated with me, but I really enjoyed seeing this sort of naive guy being taken advantage of a con man and then just beating the hell out of him. I don't know why that resonates with me right now.
Damn it, Randy.
But I just really enjoyed it.
What could it be? Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. I really was drawn by the story. I liked how she kind of meanders through being a little detective there.
Yeah.
But yeah, the cartoon kind of threw me off. And as much as I love seeing Rob McElhenney, who's Mac from It's Always Sunny. Oh my
God, I loved his character.
I feel like he was a little out of place here. It's like he's funny.
Yeah.
But he's too funny. He's too much of a character to fit within the world of Fargo. And
you remember that Fargo season one had Key and Peele basically playing themselves, right?
Yeah, but there's something about seeing Mac in this world that just like, that's Mac.
I don't know.
It's Mac with a mustache.
Fargo has it is a serious show, but it has a streak of dark comedy and a streak of surrealism to it. I mean, they had a damn UFO in the second season.
I get that, but it's more like, remember Mike Myers in Inglourious Basterds?
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that either.
Oh man, that just weirded me out.
I know, it throws people off. I get it. It did not bother me. In fact, I was delighted.
I was very amused by his character, but I did not like how I didn't think it meshed. No. That is all it was.
I loved this sort of weird look at the crazy like 70s sci-fi Hollywood world. I thought it was such a fun standalone that I wouldn't care if there was more story around it.
Yeah.
And so I loved this episode as much as I loved any. I love Fargo. Fargo is clearly my favorite show. And I felt like the part of what I appreciate in a good show, part of why I love Guardians of the Galaxy, part of why I love a lot of the shows I love, part of why I love Legion. I love a show with swagger who can back it up. Mm-hmm. I love someone who's going to come in and say, hey, I'm going to do this for an hour this week, and you're going to love it. And when they're right, I love that.
I would say, as far as showrunners are concerned, yeah, I think Noah Hawley is one of the top three, if not the top,
I'd
showrunner right now.
I'd easily put him at the top right now.
What he did here, with what he's done with Legion.
Yep.
I
put him above Vince Gilligan, who I think is maybe the second or third best.
I'm more impressed with like other people, like ensemble wise, like yeah, what you're able to do. Like Leftovers is above this show for me.
Oh, do you like Leftovers?
I bet, love it. But Noah Hawley is clearly commanding this ship. He has a very distinct style, and his mark on this show is just brilliant.
Yeah. Also, more Carrie Coon on my TV, I'm good with.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we should have just named this episode, Carrie Coon's the best. She's the best.
She's the best.
All right, you want to jump over to Leftovers?
No, but you do.
We don't have to. Doing this.
You want to more than me, but doing this. Let's do it.
All right, so the episode we're talking about is Good Morning Melbourne, which is their fourth episode.
Good day, Melbourne.
Good day, Melbourne. Is that what it is?
That's what it's called.
All right. I did a lot of research ahead of this.
So this is, the Leftovers is always focused on one character, more or less, on each episode. Like it's other characters will be in it, but it's focused. And this is the Nora episode.
This is, well, it's both Nora and Kevin. I would say it purposely follows them in two different paths and their little adventures through Melbourne.
But I was more interested in Nora's story.
Were you?
Yeah.
I mean,
I love watching Carrie Coon.
Yeah,
she's
true.
No matter what you give her to do, she's always great. And she was fantastic here in her sort of like wanting desperately to have faith, but not being able to get past her own skepticism.
Les, do you check this episode out?
I have not seen any of the Leftovers.
Oh,
but you know Carrie Coon.
Les hasn't seen the Leftovers, so
yeah, I can't place her offhand. I have to look her up.
We'll just we'll exclude you from this while we go down the rabbit hole here. So yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I was a little bit more riveted by her story because we've seen Kevin have his delusions, or if you want to say his prophetic visions, however you want to view it.
My issue with this one is I saw the ending coming. Like, I knew that's what was going to happen. I knew that wasn't really her.
Yeah, when he sees Evie?
Yeah, I knew that wasn't really her, and we followed that whole track, and I'm like, you need to get to the point where they reveal that's not her, because I was not a surprise in any way.
I mean, I still think they do such fantastic like weaving in their storytelling here. Yeah. In particular, like Kevin sees Evie on the TV, right? Mm-hmm.
Evie on the TV
on that morning show, and he ends up going to the exact place where she is, which allows his father, Kevin Garvey Sr., to see him on the TV.
Yep.
Which they already have that weird relationship where they've seen each other on the TV through mm-hmm. when he died, and he Kevin crossed over to the hotel in International yep. Assassin, right? Yep. So already, like, you know, there's that's resonating, but I also thought they have this part where Kevin calls the hotel concierge and he complains about the TV not turning on.
Yep.
And they realize that he's not on the he's not, his name isn't on for the being in the hotel.
Right.
So he adds his name to the hotel because of the TV and his vision. And that, as a result, allows his father to later call the hotels and find him. Like, it's just kind of brilliant how they account for all of that and have his craziness in a way still have a sort of purpose for how he is found and how these right. paths cross. And it seems to be, we see Kevin reading that book, the book of Kevin at yep. one point. Yep. And I was totally pausing and trying to like read lines as well. But there's one mention in particular that Matt's writing in this book about whether or not Kevin is insane or this is a test of faith. And I think that was like it's purposely been shown that Kevin, is he drinking poison because he's insane? Is he trusting in the pseudoscience, or is Nora trusting in pseudoscience to send her somewhere into this afterlife because she's insane? Or are these right. tests of faith, is following the tape recording and the chicken for Kevin Sr.? Like, this is kind of like this repeated pattern of this idea of like, are these people crazy, or is crazy a form of faith, I guess?
Well, they're
and I know it are.
What's interesting in this? What's interesting to me in this is how broken everyone is.
Yeah,
like we get episodes where Nora and Kevin and even Kevin Sr. seem to be like on more of an even keel,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll see something like this where they're all so clearly broken. And I think that's The Leftovers has always been about grief and about loss, and this is definitely a question of like, can you ever fully recover from something like this? And I think that's interesting.
Yeah, and you know. What Kevin never necessarily lost something as so much as he's just depressed.
No, what Kevin lost was his I mean, Kevin lost more than anybody else because he lost his sense of what reality was. Like Kevin had a wife and a daughter and a solid life and a good job as a sheriff and, you know, law and order and all that made sense
to
him.
But he wasn't happy then either.
When he was married to her and everything like that, didn't you get the sense that they were happier?
Happier, yes. I don't know. I mean, he was still like cheating on her, and he seemed depressed in that life. He was hiding stuff from her all the time.
But like, I think it all made a sort of sense to him. And then all of a sudden, his wife joins a cult. His daughter becomes weird and joins a cult.
His life got flipped, turned upside down.
And being a sheriff didn't make any sense anymore. And so like, he has no foundation anymore. He's just flailing.
Yeah. Lori being his person that he can reach out to, that kind of grounds him, and yet that makes like a rift between him and Nora. It was an interesting relationship detail, especially if I was also thinking about this, like the women in his life, they all seem to kind of recognize that he's crazy.
Yeah.
And all the men in his life seem to think he's a prophet.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Like, Matt thinks he's a prophet, and John and his son Michael, they're all writing the book together.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, his ex-wife and Nora and maybe his daughter, they're all like, you're off your rocker a bit.
Look,
here.
They may know he's crazy, but he looks like Justin Theroux, and therefore it doesn't matter that
so
he's
crazy.
So
they're crazy for him.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's jump over to Nora, because I'm embarrassed I made that gross noise.
Nora's story I really like. I love watching Carrie Coon kind of try to play like she's still okay.
In command of things. Yeah.
And she has that subtlety, like everywhere, whether it's here, whether it's in Fargo, whether it was her work on the Ben Affleck movie, whose name I'm blanking on right now.
Gone Girl.
She's always She always plays this sort of commanding, calm, and yet fragile person.
Yeah.
And I think that the subtlety of that performance is always impressive to me. And I think she's great here. I also was very happy to have revealed what the dude setting himself on fire was all about.
Oh, yeah.
Look, like, okay, clearly he gave the wrong answer, and now he wants to kill himself.
And she gave the wrong answer, yep. And hers was yep. on the other side.
No, I think he gave the wrong answer, too.
I mean,
I think that he...
I think what they say is it's a matter of how they answered, right?
Yeah. Well, don't you think that he said the same thing? He's like, no, I wouldn't do it, and then they wouldn't do the thing, and that's why he killed himself, because he couldn't get...
But she said, yes, I would.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And so it's not a matter of saying yes or saying no.
Right.
It was a matter of not saying you don't care.
Right.
I think, basically.
Yeah.
Because if you're being sent to a different plane of existence...
Yeah.
Why do you care about this?
Yeah.
Or is it a matter of testing whether someone is stable enough to make rational decisions?
Right.
So it could be that no matter what you answer,
you get this close. Yeah.
No, well, you get this close and they still deny you. And they deny you and then they wait for you to kind of come back to make sure you don't kill yourself like the self-immolator did. And if you don't kill yourself, then you still are stable enough to kind of handle rejection. And therefore, you're stable enough to make a rational decision about this process.
I don't know. And I still am not convinced it's not some kind of scam.
It could also just be a scam. But, I mean, we heard that Larry Applegate or whatever his name is, Mark Lynn Baker, that he went to the other side.
Yeah.
So.
But Mark Lynn Baker's clearly a little crazy.
Yeah.
He's not Kevin level crazy, but he's a little crazy.
I mean, seeing Nora's kind of like transition through this episode, her, I guess, unraveling.
Yeah.
Like, you see at the beginning, like, her going through the airport, and there's the line where she has her world class, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Which we were talking on our Patreon episode the other day about Kyle just getting that as well.
Yeah, TSA pre-check.
Yeah. But she gets that, and she says the line, "It's okay, I'll see you on the other side."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When they go into the bathroom, like, throughout this episode, they seem to have, like, a bunch of references to her and babies, like, kind of beating you in over the head a little bit with it. But, like, they hook up in the bathroom, and the wallpaper right there has babies and storks on it. And she has, let me see, what was the other one? When she's trying to go to where the doctor's checking her out, and he says, like, your levels could be high, you know, that could be pregnancy. And she's like, that's not a problem, I have an IUD or whatever. But it seems like they're kind of hinting, like, could she be pregnant or whatever? And, like, that got people speculating. And then her having to hold the child at the bus station, which seemed like such a contrived thing.
Yeah, by the way, I don't know how they do parenting in Australia, but if you have a job interview, I don't think you give your baby to a random woman at the bus stop and say, look, just hold on to her for 10 minutes.
I don't think you bring your baby and then go, well, I don't know what to do here. Drop it off. Like, that had to be a setup, right?
I don't think that woman's getting the job. She seems a little unstable.
But Gary Coon going in there and be like, you have to hire her anyway. That's discrimination.
Yes, here's her baby.
Yeah.
That was crazy. And I hope that was a setup, because otherwise that lady's got some issues.
Yeah. I mean, I just really like how it showed there's such a fakeness to the relationship that Nora and Kevin already had.
Yeah.
And they kind of either hold on to it by not really talking about things, or each of them, like, bottling up their own issues.
Yeah.
And when on the plane, he asks, like, how can you justify me being on this trip with you, Denora? She's like, well, I'll say that I'm leaving you because I just can recognize that we're in a codependency and we'd both be better off alone.
Yeah.
And that was completely true.
Yeah.
So what'd you think about the fight at the end then?
I'm tired of watching them fight, to be honest.
Have we seen another big fight, bud, between
them? Yeah, they had big fights all through season two.
I mean, this one looked like there's no walking back from it.
I don't know. I feel like they've had big knockdown dragouts before.
Yeah. I just know that the cinematography on this, like the library shot where he's walking around there.
Yep.
And then the water from the fire extinguishers in the hotel draining off of her eyes.
Yeah.
Those were gorgeous shots.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah, it was really nice.
A little side note. The person that Kevin asks in the koala costume to get directions from, Damon Lindelof was in that. So there's his little cameo.
Let me ask you this, because you know Damon Lindelof lore a little bit. Because people were mad about Lost and he deleted his Twitter account, does he just wear a koala costume all the time wherever he goes?
He has to. Yeah. He actually has an Instagram account now, and he posts stuff occasionally on that.
Is he always dressed as a koala?
Always as a koala. Yeah. Always as a koala. I don't know what his weird thing is.
If you see a koala on the street, go up to it and tell it you like the ending of Lost, because he'll sensitive about that.
This also just used the great music, the A-ha's take on me.
That was pretty good.
And it had another theme song at the beginning, or a different theme song.
I didn't
know
the theme either.
Yeah.
I like the changing themes, though. I like the different credit that keeps the credits interesting.
All right. I love this show. I'll keep diving into this each week.
I want to ask Les a question.
Yep.
How much of that did you hear?
I didn't pay attention to any of it. Who are these people? Who are these people?
I feel like if you heard just that, Leftover sounds like utter gibberish to you.
It really does. I was really wanting to ask if I don't know any of these people's personal stories, does the overall story go anywhere? Am I just going to watch three seasons of like people arguing and then?
No, it's good, and I actually really like the show. Not as much as Grant, because Grant loves this show, but I do really. It's high up on my viewing. I really like it, but it is funny because I think hearing about season 3, episode 4, is that what we just talked about? Out of context with everything else, it sounds like utter gibberish.
I mean, it just sounds like a lot of inter-family fights, and nobody's sure if the show premise is real.
Oh, it's real.
I mean, yes, in
a
way.
It's a Damon Lindelof show.
Yeah.
Hey, he said lovingly.
Lovingly. The island was wonderful.
And that's if you see a koala on the street, Les, that's what you tell him.
All right, so Better Call Saul this week had the trial for Jimmy and him squaring off against his brother.
Yep.
And we were waiting for this to basically culminate in a few good men kind of scene. And we totally got it.
Yeah. I love the relationship with Kim and Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
I love that Kim's sort of been dragged into the dark side with him. But my favorite moment of this was when he was on the phone or when he was in the vet's office. And he's like, I need somebody with light fingers. And he's like, well, does the guy have to squeeze anywhere tight?
And you immediately go,
I immediately knew.
It's Yul.
I was like, yeah, that's awesome. I was so happy.
Yeah, I totally knew it was going to be him.
And when he did the bump, I'm like, oh, that's all we're going to see of him. I didn't know he was going to like confront him in the courtroom and I'd tell him what he did.
Yeah.
But that was crazy.
Yeah. In fact, that was a little bit better,
yeah,
I think.
It was.
They were like, we're not trying to hide this. We want you to know what we did. And we're going to just out you as a fraud.
And I like that opening extended sequence with him and Rebecca, where we see that Chuck, even when Chuck is not trying to be a douchebag, he's kind of a douchebag. Like, there is nothing douchier than you're sick and you don't want to admit it to your ex-wife, like, because you're afraid she'll what? She's already left you. What are you afraid of?
Hey, Walter White went through the same thing.
Yeah.
It's a matter of pride.
Uh-huh.
But the stick up Chuck's ass through every episode, I mean, to the amount of misery he causes himself being buttoned down and then takes out on everyone else for having the gall to do things he won't do.
Chuck is such an asshole, and I love watching him taken down. And there is no part of me that thinks, oh, Jimmy, you're corrupt. You're corrupting yourself. You're going to become Saul. I'm like, you know what? Chuck drove him to all of this, and I liked seeing Chuck get his comeuppance.
That cross-examination, which is like basically the last third of the episode, I guess.
Yeah.
I like that Jimmy never kind of tries to just play a guilt card.
Right.
Like I did all of this for you. How could you do this to me?
Yeah, no.
It's basically like, what's up with your symptoms? And why might that drive you to be the type of person who hates me?
Yeah.
And that kind of approach to it.
Yeah.
It's such a wonderful thing to watch. It was so gripping.
And by the way, while I do hate Chuck, I love Michael McKean. Michael McKean plays the hell out of this guy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. This was a fantastic episode. And I was a little disappointed that Mr. Plainview, I think it was Mr. Plainview's guess at what the story was. I thought that was a great guess.
Mr. Plainview made a comment on our site in the comments that was pretty good.
It was a pretty good theory. It did not come to pass.
About the doctor showing up and like dropping.
And that was too bad because I thought it was a really good, it was a really good idea. But what they did here, I really liked.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like the other one could have been a little bit more of a solid case. Like,
yeah.
Hey, if you still have power of attorney, if he didn't like take care of that,
yeah.
And you can say, look, I'm just going to commit you so you can't even testify against me. How diabolical would that have been?
That might have been like a little bit beyond the pale. Maybe that's why they didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
But also, no Gus and Mike this week.
No.
Just Jimmy. All full on focus on Jimmy and Kim.
I mean, I feel like we had a lot of Gus and Mike the previous episode.
We did.
So
I thought this was another great episode. This show continues to just blow me away.
Now, I'm behind on this season, but seasons one and two were so good. The show was such a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Bob Odenkirk, and I love Breaking Bad. And so, of course, I wanted to see more of it, but that's no guarantee that the side story or a prequel is going to be watchable on its own.
When this was announced, I was scared of it.
Yeah, but
I thought it's going to cheapen the legacy of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, but the brother relationship between Jimmy and Chuck is great. Michael McKean's great. The romance between Jimmy and Kim in seasons one and two feels so real and so like they both know what's at stake and what they're adult. All the relationships are so adult about it.
And the Mike and Gus backstory, like. I wanted to see how Mike got involved with all this stuff.
Well, and Mike's my favorite character from Breaking Bad. Yeah. So seeing him involved immediately was like, all right, well, I love Bob Odenkirk, but I'm really watching this show for Mike.
Fair. Jonathan Banks.
But I'm behind on this season. I'm just thrilled to hear that it is just inexplicably continuing to just roll on great and be amazing.
Vince Gilligan at this point, I don't know that Vince Gilligan can do any wrong. Vince Gilligan is at the top of his game. And
he's proved himself,
And also, Vince Gilligan's a guy who you listen to the Breaking Bad and the Better Call Saul podcasts, who is so humble and acknowledges all the other writers and all the producers and the editors. And like, everyone's like, this is a guy who appreciates his team working with him. And so I feel like
He's not a diva.
He's not the auteur. He's not the guy who says, oh, I'm great, and everybody has to do what I do. He's not Aaron Sorkin, is what I'm saying, I guess.
He's not Aaron Sorkin. No.
And as a result, he's not likely to have as big of a fall because he's always got good people around him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I look forward to Better Call Saul continuing to be great, and I look forward to whatever they do next.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we are going to go ahead and end it here. We will be back next week to talk about at least a couple of those shows. You know it.
And another Netflix show, because Netflix is putting a new show out every Friday in May.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, and I wanted to give a shout out to one other podcast, TV on the Pod, Mike Moody.
Oh, yeah.
Our fearless leader of Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
He just launched a brand new podcast because he's doing like 12 of them. I don't know.
Sure.
But TV on the Pod is one where he goes behind the scenes with other people who do podcasts about TV to discuss kind of the process and the passion behind all of it. And he just launched. Please go check it out over on iTunes. Subscribe to it. Give him a review. Show him the love. And give it a listen, because I believe in a couple episodes, yours truly and Randy are going to be talking about Beach Cop Detectives for a full episode on there.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
What's that?
Oh, Beach Cop Detectives? It's a show about a little show called Terriers on Netflix.
I saw that, the dog show, yeah.
God damn it.
It's a little herd of podcasts about an also little herd of show. And a little herd of network. Oh, boy. Anyway, we're going to go ahead and end things there. Thanks, Les. Thanks, Randy.
Thanks, Grant.
And until next week,
TV Dudes out!
Bup, 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 bup. The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.